CPS. Go. Inco. Go. PUS. Go. Surgeon. Go. Booster. Go. Copy that. We have a go from you guys.
This is Talking Sound.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Talking Sound Podcast, the only podcast on the internet where negative 10 is a number to be desired. I am Chris Jordan, your host, coming to you live today from the Hoft Institute. How are you ladies doing?
Doing great.
Awesome. Well, I have with me Emran Malik, who is it Malik or Malik?
Malik.
Malik, yeah. Okay. Who is actually the head of the Hoft Institute, the chief operating officer. As well as Mayette Andreasen, who is an associate professor of game design here at the Hoft Institute. Let's get into it a little bit. What is the Hoft Institute all about? We're specifically here to talk about the Hoft Institute Game Development Lab, but it has a great, great history, the Hoft Institute. So yeah. Tell us a little bit about its founding, Amrit.
Yeah, so Hoft Institute... the name Hoft comes from House of Tutors, and it's a company my parents started. Just last year, we changed to the name Hoft Institute. And we are an educational business we're here to help students succeed in their goals. And specifically for the game program, we're here to help students find jobs in the game industry.
Yeah, and I ran across y'all at Classic Game Fest. It's one of the many events that I work throughout the year. And I love just walking around, checking out the booths, checking out some of the new technology. It's great to see people there with their, like, DIY homemade VR games.
That's great.
It's wild. There was one a couple, I think there was a guy set up like 2-3 booths down from y'all that was like chicken and waffles. It was like a flying waffle game. But it's so interesting. People like myself who grew up with Atari, things like that, are really starting to get into the world of game design, especially with worlds like Minecraft, things mm-hmm. like that, where it's not necessarily a simplistic world, but a very simplistic design in and of itself, the way it's done. It's not very refined graphics, things like that.
Yeah.
You yourself are actually a professor. Of video graphics, things like that. Tell us a little bit about that.
My background, so I got my bachelor's in 2D animation, actually, with a minor in illustration. And then I got my master's degree in computer graphics. So 3D, all that fun stuff. And I've taught a lot of classes, both in media arts and animation and game design. Some pre-production classes, some full-on production, and some more post classes. So more upper-level classes where students are really working on their final projects and things of that nature. So that's kind of my background. I started off working in the games industry. I worked at 2K Sports. I worked at Zynga back when I lived in San Francisco.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's where I went to grad school.
Okay.
in SF. And came out here to Austin, actually, because my husband got an opportunity at a game company here in Austin. And that's when I started teaching, and I've loved it.
Now, what part of the gaming industry, because not a lot of people realize, we were talking about this earlier, that a lot of times there are games, of course, that are cinematic, huge games, things like Final Fantasy, where there are hundreds of hundreds of hundreds of people working on it. You know, there's Philharmonic orchestras writing and doing the scores and things like that. But so many games are developed in teams of 5 to 10 people.
That is true. I mean, obviously, the companies I worked at in San Francisco were bigger companies, but I did work within small groups. So I worked as a front-end artist. So I was working on reskinning menus, which is just taking old menus, putting new textures on them, refining animations, things of that nature. I sometimes made props for the menus on the games. And sometimes I would redo textures or texture maps for characters and things of that nature. And that was my first job out of the gate. And then when I worked at Zynga, I just, anything they threw at me, it was mostly asset creation. So 2D and 3D, nothing really needed to move. You know, it was more, it was all social gaming. So it was like, oh, these are things that you're going to win. These were special things that people could win, like special little awards.
Trophies
and things.
Achievements,
that
things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there was some UI design that I did as well, but mostly it was a lot of asset creation for them. And it just used everything I had in my wheelhouse. Oh, I'm going to have to use matte painting for this. And oh, I'm going to have to do 3D modeling and texture.
Now, as far as, and this is where I kind of want you to answer, and then we'll swing back to Amron. You, as a student coming from just learning this stuff, not just on an interface, but in books and class, things like that. What was the transition like for you going from student directly into the professional world, working in a team, being a part of an integrated team like that?
Well, there is a bit of a learning curve, right? Because there's just certain things that you don't know, that you aren't taught when you are in school.
Yeah.
They don't really, well, when I was going to school, like, it's not like they had dev kits that you could practice the game, like test out the game with when you're at school. You didn't have that, you know, to test out for bugs and stuff like that. Now there is more stuff that you can do. It's a lot easier. Graduated with my master's. I look young. I'm not that young. Some of the other things too are just soft skills. And those are some of the things in Hof that we bring to the students, things that I had to learn on my own. So just how to kind of navigate that professional world, how to seek out mentors on the job, people who are vested in your success is very important. Actual people who are vested in your success. And getting to know what your boss wants to, and being able, because every boss is different. I had one boss, I worked in an advertising agency after undergrad, right? And he micromanaged everything, he was super micromanaging. But then my boss at game companies, they didn't micromanage, they trusted you to be able to do your job. So, you know, getting used to not being micromanaged and being trusted to do my job. You know, those are things that sometimes you just have to ask, you know, how do you like to get work? Do you want me to show you the iterative process, or do you just want the end result? Things like that.
Well, and it really is, like you said, a lot of interpersonal skill that until you're in that professional environment, it can be hard. Even I myself, as an AV engineer out doing live shows, I was telling Amron earlier that I'm pretty loath to put engineers that I have not worked with on a show.
Yeah, that's very true. And that's kind of what Hoft is about. It's kind of bridging that gap. So it's for, you know, the students we have here, it's an 8-month program. They might already have degrees from 4-year colleges. They have the skills, they have the know-how. What they don't have is someone vouching for them. That, hey, this person's really good at what they do and they can be trusted to get the job done. And then Hoft's program also gives them the equivalent of kind of an internship. You know, they're making a game, they're publishing a game. They're working together in a team. They have to use those interpersonal skills. And then we teach them the soft skills too, so that if we advocate for someone because they're really good, they'll be successful when they go on their interview or...
Yeah, precisely. And like I said, coming back to you, Amron, you much like myself, went to school for something totally different than what you're doing now.
Yes.
I guess not necessarily different. You're a COO of a company and you went to school for finance and business.
Yes.
So not horribly different, but totally different than what you were doing.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about your personal journey, how you came to start this branch of the Hoft Institute.
Yeah, of course.
Here at the Game Development Lab.
A lot of people, when they go through their undergrad, it doesn't necessarily match up what they do, you know, years later. But yeah, my trajectory, my background was in finance. I was working in the banking industry, working as a financial analyst for a company out in Chicago. And came back to Austin. I really, since my parents started this company, it's been a passion project. So I've always, loved being around Hoft Institute. And then just being in education also just really, I gravitated towards that. Like being able to see students succeed. You see them along the journey and you see them before and you're with them throughout and then after. And so I really enjoyed that part of it. And this past January when we started this game program, I really wanted to be part of it. It was a brand new project, and being in the game industry here in Austin, which is such an amazing city, was really exciting. You have a lot of different studios. You have a lot of different things going on in the entertainment space.
Yes.
It's not just out in California. Like, we have it over here too in Texas. So being part of that has been super exciting as well. So.
Yeah. Well, and it's like we were saying before we started recording earlier. So many times you see programs that are fantastic programs. But the one thing that students rarely have to go through is intense actual internships.
Exactly. And that's why we called our program Lab. It's Game Design and Development Lab. We want students to be in that lab environment, a safe environment where you have these experienced instructors there to help guide them. So that way, if they do have troubles going through things, there's people there to help them along the way.
Yeah.
And we're their support system to help go through that entire process and getting a job. I think so often, not only in the game industry, but a lot of industries, you're so focused in school on just finishing, just graduating, getting that degree. You're not focused on the soft and hard skills that you need to get a job.
Yeah.
The team building, actually working with other people, getting all that experience. You don't think about that. And then when you're trying to find a job, you're like, wait a minute, I need connections. I need a network. I need
Is quite honestly, like we were saying before the show, a good 40% of it.
Yes,
it is.
It's beyond the realm of important.
Yes.
Not just the interpersonal skills, but the connections and the network and getting out, being seen, all that kind of stuff. For me, especially being an AV engineer, schools like Full Sail, things like that have popped up all over the country over the last decade. And I love them. They're great. But the one thing that I have noticed is, A, their lack of emphasis on internship. They require an internship of about 20 to 30 hours throughout your course of study. Like I was telling you earlier, Amron, statistically, the people that I've met that succeed and know their field and know it backward and forward were the ones that beyond that 30 hours continued doing internships. They left this studio and then they went over there and learned something totally different.
Exactly.
That's what I did, actually. The difference between undergrad and grad school for me, and I took about 4 years just working in between the two, is I didn't have an internship while I was in school and undergrad. And that definitely hurt me. And,
how so?
It was harder to find work. You know, people, you're separated. If you've had an internship, you're separated from people who don't have an internship because potential employers like, okay, well, they've actually worked on the job in a related field or in this exact field. So I'm more inclined to hire this person than this person, even if their skill sets are about the same. When I had an internship while I was in grad school, I got a job within 3 months of of graduating.
And the way I describe it for people, as someone who went to school long enough to be a doctor and holds no degree, had people told me that I could be doing what I was doing in technical theater in high school and helping friends' bands in college, and I would be doing it as a career, who knows where my life would be, because it just wasn't encouraged. It wasn't encouraged to follow your passion. Even when I interviewed the designer of Qbert in the last episode, he was like, I was a systems admin. Like, I played games and they were cool, but one day I left my job and then I saw an ad for a thing at Gottlieb Games. And I was like, oh, I'll go check it out. Like, had never done it, just kind of answered the call of, well, that looks cool, and is now in love with it and has followed that path for years. And it's interesting to me, the one thing that I pull from my years of jobs before I started my career, cooking was probably the one that is the most analog for life, that really has the most nuance to it and most reflective of life. And the example I give to people of people who have done internships and people that haven't are the example of mushrooms. Chefs love mushrooms. They're great. They prefer a wild gathered mushroom as opposed to the same exact mushroom that's been grown in a sterile environment.
Yeah.
The woods, the soil, everything else that it's been steeped in are what give it the flavor, are what give it the seasoning, as opposed to the one that's just been grown in a sterile agar in a warehouse.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's how we look to ourselves as a fifth year finishing school. So students go through and we're just polishing up the skills. They're polishing up the skills that they already have. They're working on a team. Maybe they didn't get a chance to do that or do that for a long period of time, getting to go out there and network and have people help them guide them through that process, because it is a scary place to be if you're by yourself and you're trying to go to a networking event where you don't know anybody. How do I introduce myself? What do I talk about? Am I going to sound silly? All these types of things where you're just, and you know, it's, I think across different industries, you need to have that help.
Absolutely. And for most people, you just, it's a learned skill if you're lucky. And for, that was for me, you know, naturally I'm kind of an introvert and I had to get myself, force myself outside of those, that comfort zone.
A lot of us techs are.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, I wear black and I'm either backstage or off in the corner. If you see me move, something went horribly awry. Like, if you see me, something went bad.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're a solitary folk. Techs.
Being social, but when I'm around a lot of people I don't know, especially when I was young, it was very hard for me to talk to people. And so I understand how hard it can be to put yourself out there. And I just did it with practice. And, you know.
Yeah. And it does take a while, especially with networking and doing stuff like that. Like I said, it's such an important part of the industry. And for you yourself, as someone who studied this in college, you didn't really come across it secondarily. It's what you went to school for, was digital design. And then moving into game design after that. Where would you say that the skills that y'all are teaching in the curriculum of the Hoft Institute here at the Game Development Lab, where would you say the difference is drawn between what you're learning there and what you learn in a standard classroom?
Well, in a standard classroom, you're going to be going through a lot of demos. I mean, you're going to be learning things that you've never been introduced before, too. So certain softwares, things of that nature. It's very project-based, but there's a lot of instruction in terms of how to use that software or how to understand these concepts or how to draw this way or how to digitally paint that way. Whereas the students at Hoth, they already have those skills. It's not about really doing a lot of, at least on the art side, a lot of art demos. There is some instruction like, oh, I'm not quite sure how to do this and the other.
Yeah, it's not like, okay, today we're going to build a wireframe character.
Yeah.
And then we're going to rotate it 360 degrees and then on the Z axis over the top.
We're not teaching basic basics.
We're teaching basics. They already know the basics coming in. And a lot of things, too, there's a lot of more class flipping. It's like, well, if you don't know something, how can you figure it out? And then if you need help, we'll help you. Because in the job environment, obviously, that's a lot of what it is if you don't know things.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what the difference is they're working on this. They already have these skills. It's really about refining them and then guiding them towards making someone want to offer them a job. Right. So maybe they have a portfolio, but it's just not presented great. Or maybe they have a resume, but it's kind of a mess. And so they need to rewrite it. Maybe they don't have business cards.
Yes.
You know, that's a big one. I know. It's a huge one. And it's like, well, if you're going to a networking event, how are people going to contact you if you don't have a business card?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think it was actually you at the at Classic Games Fest that turned my card over and was like, ooh, I like this part with like where we met.
Yeah.
And all
that.
I
loved that.
A friend of mine and I years ago had an idea for, and we're still trying to develop it, just a slightly thicker than business card, digital business card.
Oh, that would be cool.
Where you can literally just like, hey, my name's so-and-so. We met here. This is what we were talking about. There you go.
Oh, that would be cool. You can do that.
I know. Goodness. It'd be incredible. But especially with looking at things, coming back to you, Amron, in the professional world, in the world of a COO, someone like that, how important is the networking part of things? Because, I mean, we've kind of touched on it a couple times here in the last few minutes.
Yeah, but it is so important to let people know that you exist. There's, you know, 100 candidates with your exact same credentials. What sets you apart? So if there's somebody there that I trust that can vouch for that person, great, that'll save me time. Because when you're, after you hire and then you find out later, wait, this person can't really work well on a team. They're not a good fit. Well, you have to go through that whole hiring process again, and it's a long process. It takes a lot of time. So you want to make sure you're making the right choice.
Oh, even just the interview process in and of itself is time-consuming.
Yeah.
It's rough, and it can be rough. And I think the one thing, too, that a lot of students forget is to be themselves, right? So they get really nervous. And it's a no. They've already wanted you to come into the interview, so they know you have the skills. So now they just want to see your personality.
You've gotten past the hard part. The hard part is the open door.
Yeah.
And how to open the door. Yeah. And where is the door? Someone want to tell me where the door is? Because I just see a bunch of walls here. And it's hard, even in the AV industry. A lot of this podcast, the whole reason this podcast started, I had just gotten off of a stint for about a year and a half on broadcast radio television. And gone back to being freelance. Mm-hmm. And my wife has this concept of every 15 years you get to reinvent yourself. She was like, you're up against that time. What are you going to do? And I'm like, you know, I don't know. I really kind of miss teaching. Mm-hmm. I really kind of miss that. But I don't know if I'm going to go back to like that world. But I'd really kind of, you know, maybe like to start taking on a student or two and start kind of passing on my knowledge and finding good technicians and bringing them home to be like, look, here's how you run the cameras. Here's how you set up a video mixer and move them on to the next level. And that is what begat Talking Sound. Was like the easiest way I can think of to do that is to start an instructional podcast where I put on instructional episodes every once in a while where it's like, hey, here's how you choose microphones. Here's how you set up a video mixer. Here's how you clean your equipment. Then it kind of morphed more into this where it was, no, people need to learn like how they get into the industry to begin with.
Yes.
That's very important. But yeah, let's talk about the networking thing more. This town is very small, and most towns are. You know, you say, oh, I know this person, and suddenly they're like, oh, I know that person.
It happened just before this show.
It happened just before this show. I'll use a kind of a funny example. I was at RTX at the Hoft booth last week, and there was this print that I had been eyeing for quite some time that I really wanted to buy. So I finally went up, and I actually happened to meet the artist who created the print. We signed it. I bought it. And then I framed it, put it up on my wall. I posted a picture on Facebook, and I said, it was time for a change out. This is the artist. This is amazing print. And then one of the other instructors here, Chip, was like, oh my gosh, I live right next door to him. He's great. And I was like, what?
That's awesome.
I know. I was like, it's so funny. It's like, we should all get together. I was like, yes.
Yeah. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that's how tiny this the network
such
is.
Such a small world.
Yeah. So small. And that's something I think a lot of students when they're in school don't realize at all. You know, when I was an undergrad, I didn't realize it. I knew it more when I was in grad school because I was older. But they don't get it. They don't understand that even their teachers, too. It's like, they all know a ton of people.
Yeah.
And if you're just waffling away your time, they're not going to recommend you. Whereas if you are really a hard worker, you might not even be the best of the best, but your work is decent and you are reliable and you get it done and you ask good questions, I'm going to recommend that person over someone who maybe is better, but they're unreliable.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
didn't suit up and show up.
Yeah, they have that hustle.
Yeah.
You know, just to go and around, like when you're trying to get a job, you need that hustle. Go knock on 500 doors, keep at it. And you know, you'll get somebody that'll want to talk to you.
Yeah.
And also this practice, going through all of it is practice, meeting people, talking with people, getting comfortable, and then figuring out, you know, what is my voice? How do I represent myself better? And just being comfortable in that interview.
Yeah, it is really, like you were saying a while ago, Maya, it's very much being comfortable in your own skin, being comfortable with yourself, and being comfortable with your realm of expertise, you know, understanding the fact that, like you said, they brought you into the interview for a reason.
Yeah.
They wouldn't be considering you as a candidate if you weren't good at what you were doing.
Exactly.
I mean, if they are, do you really want to work with that company? Like, if you're really horrible at what you do and they're like, you're our guy, is that the company you want to go work for? You know, but really when it comes down to real life, it is the fact of you have to be willing to step out. You have to be willing to do it. What was it that made the Hoft Institute focus on a game creation lab of all things that y'all have tutored over the years? Yes, so like I said, I did some Google stalking over the last few days of the Hoft Institute. It's my due diligence. Of all the things that y'all tutored, ESL, everything else, what was it that was like, for our first curriculum, we're going to write a game creation curriculum?
Yeah, well, we spoke with Dr. Dom Fussell over at UT Austin, and he, you know, was telling us about this gap in the industry. And as we researched more and we started talking to more and more people, we're like, okay, I think we can help bridge this gap. I mean, we have had expertise for 38 years in helping students and kind of mentoring them along the way. So it just really perfectly aligned with all of our natural strengths. And then we were introduced to Dr. Sarah Abraham and Chip and to Mayette, and it just kind of grew naturally from there. But I think Austin being home to so many different game studios, being in that entertainment space, everything just kind of aligned. And so we said, okay, let's try this. Let's see how we can do it. And as we've gone out to all these different conferences and we've been spreading the word, we're hearing really great feedback from all the students and from studios and other people that really, you know, reinforces that there is this gap that exists. And so we're hoping just to bridge that gap.
Yeah,
I think when you, like you were saying before, when you're in school, you're really focusing on trying to get through school, right? And you're not thinking about how much work it's going to be to get a job.
Your mind's on your next test, man. It ain't on 3 years from now. You haven't learned the concept of 6-month, 1-year, 3-year, 5-year plan.
Yeah. I think a lot of young people, maybe who are still in school, might not realize that it's a job trying to find a job.
It is.
It's a full-time job.
It is a full-time job.
Yeah. You have got to get out there and hit the pavement. And it's not about, you know, I think networking too has a scary connotation to people because they think, I got to go talk to people I don't know.
Yeah.
And then ask them about jobs. And that's not really what networking is about. It's about basically making friends.
Yeah.
That's what it's about. It's about making friends, and then your friends happen to work in the industry, yeah. and they get to know you, and then they're like, oh, I have this thing. Would you like to be a part of this thing? And you're like, well, yes, I would. Yeah.
Like I say, we're all looking for the door on the wall.
Yeah.
These connections that we make as far as networking are really just windows that we're installing in the wall to be able to see inside.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a great way to look at it, where it's like, literally, this person is just a window into that side of the industry for me.
Yeah.
And it's very much, I've taken on the aspect myself with HG Universal Network and a few things where it's like I have hit the point of critical mass where I still have to grow in my industry. There, you know as well as I do, you teach Maya 4D and stuff. There are certifications you have to keep up with.
It's never ending.
There's constant learning curve. Whereas most people are reading novels. I'm like, I don't have time for that. I got manuals to read.
I
got gear manuals and instruction books and like mm-hmm. WordPress code to learn.
Here's this technology that yeah. came out that I need to learn now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And especially in the video industry and in the graphics industry, it is ever changing. I work the NVIDIA conference all over the country, mm-hmm. and it's pretty impressive just to see the things that from I know last October to this upcoming October at the DC convention, the things that will be different, and even from that convention to the one 2 months ago in San Diego 3 months ago. It's just vastly different. Like within 6 months, the growth curve is so entirely huge.
That's kind of awesome.
So like you said, being able to keep up with that, being able to keep on the curve of that, it's hard. And much less keeping on the curve of that as a student, as new things are coming out, and trying to find a job or trying to find an internship and secure those proper steps to career path. It's very
exhausting.
Difficult.
It's exhausting. It's really tough.
Hiring, it is.
It's part of the job of trying to be successful.
Yeah. Well, and even when you're on a team within a company, there's going to be networking that happens. You have to be able the shading group has to be able to talk with the Polygon group over here. And,
yeah. Well, you have to be able to communicate, and you have to, I think the other thing just people in general forget is that everybody's very different. They think very differently.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times people think, oh, everyone's just like me. It's just a natural thing. It's like, no.
Yeah.
Everyone is really different. Some people think so differently from you.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to communicate effectively with them.
Yep.
You just got to figure out how to talk.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's interesting. A couple times I've actually seen Alan Alda get up and speak. He has this new thing where he uses improv comedy he brings scientists from across the country together to take improv comedy classes so that they can actively learn to communicate with each other and be in each other's heads while they're collaborating with each other.
Wow.
That's cool.
So it's pretty interesting. But it's wild, the concept of, like you were saying, just being able to understand how we as people communicate.
Yeah, because the way I learn might be very different from the way you learn or
yep.
from how Amarin learns.
Even your workflow.
Even my workflow. Yeah, all of those things might be very different. I know I've had colleagues, I ask a lot of questions, but they ask a lot more questions,
yeah.
But very different questions from the type that I ask. But, and I was like, oh, I wouldn't even think to ask that question.
Hmm.
You know, it's just different ways that people think, which
yeah.
I actually think can make for a better project and better outcomes.
Definitely.
Yeah. And now with the curriculum that y'all are using right now, are y'all focusing on any particular type of gaming? Is it mainly first person? Is it app gaming? Is it VR?
The students actually get to kind of decide within their group. They decide kind of what game they want to focus on.
Let's walk through a typical semester. Let's walk through a typical curriculum course. Whenever they come in, where do they start? Where do they go through to the end?
So the curriculum is I guess what you would call team taught, because we have three teachers who are teaching the curriculum. One is game design is his background. That's Chip Spravnia. And then Sarah Abram, she is a software engineer background. And then my background is art. So we all are teaching basically the same kind of content, but from different points of view for the students. So Sarah will teach one module, and then Chip will teach another one, which is a continuation of that first module, and then I'll teach another one. And we've broken them up into, okay, this is how you start with creating a game. This is how you make a game design document. This is how you build a prototype. This is how you test, right? This is how, now this is how you do white boxing, and these are the programs that people use, and these are the things you can, you know, this is the iterative process, or this is how you can communicate with your team. These are all the different ways that you can communicate so that you guys are all staying on the same page. And then once production starts, that's a whole nother module. And it's like, okay, this is what we're doing right now. Now you're building a white box, you're play testing, you're, you know, oh, now it's time to work on the user interface. And it's broken up into, it's all project based. So it's broken up into steps, kind of manageable steps for the students. It's like, oh, now it's time to make a vertical slice. That's what you're working on now.
Yeah.
This will be due at this time. One of the things that we do weekly is we have weekly scrum, which is just weekly stand-ups where the students say what they've been doing for the week and what they need to do. Whether they've fallen behind, whether they've gotten ahead, keeps everybody accountable.
Sure.
And that's been so successful that the students have actually decided to do it more than once a week, more than just in class.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is really, really great. They decided, they were like, yeah, this is good. We need to do it more so that they're more accountable. Yeah. Because obviously they all have jobs, or some of them are actually still in school at other places. So a couple of them work full time. Mm-hmm. And so they come in the evenings to Hoft for the program here. So they learn time management as well as working on this project, their game project. So yeah, they get together, they decide through their game design document what kind of game they're gonna make. It's an iterative process. Yeah. So obviously what maybe you started with, it's not quite the same.
Yeah.
As you get towards the end of production.
Yeah. And the whole certificate program, it's 8 months. Mm-hmm. Like I was saying, it's in the evening, so students can be doing other things in the daytime. Yeah. And yeah, from start to finish, it's 8 months.
Now, what kind of requirement, resume, anything like that does a student have to have in order to become part of the program? What's the tuition like? Things like that. What's it?
Well, they definitely have to have a portfolio of some kind. They have to have work of some kind.
All right.
If they're an artist, they need to have a portfolio. They need to show what kind of program, you know, that they know some, at least some 3D basics,
sure,
as well as 2D. If they have any kind of game experience at all, that would be great. Obviously, for the game designers, they need to show that they've worked on a game or tried to make a game, that they're actually really legitimately interested in this.
Yeah.
You know, that they've tried to dabble, even if it's on their own. And same with the software engineering students. And that Sarah looks at their code and Chip looks at game design.
Yeah, so all the teachers have the final say as to who's in the program. Mm-hmm. So the students would come in, the teachers would look at something, what they've done, to give, you know, a sample of their work. And then they would come into the program. The program, the financing works out. It's $1,500 a month for 8 months.
Oh, my God.
We break it down to manageable chunks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, where can somebody go to find out more about this? Where can they go to register?
Yeah, so our website, www.hoft.edu. They can click on the game lab, and all the information is there. They can sign sign up to come by for a tour. They can apply. We have a Portfolio Posse event coming up on the 18th of August, so next Saturday, where industry people will be here to for free review students' portfolios.
So they can, resumes.
And resumes as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nice.
So we're always have different events going on, so people can follow us on social media, see what we're up to. But we invite people to come by, check us out, nice. Bring them in for a tour and meet us.
Yeah.
Now, as we close out with that information in mind, what are, from both of y'all, I would like to hear this, the three tips that you would give someone as far as resume, portfolio, general presentation of themselves, whenever.
Just in general?
Yeah.
Resumes need to be easily readable.
Okay.
You need to have your skills at the top. If you're in the games or entertainment industry, education on the bottom, and your project or employment history, that should be in the middle. Don't make it super fancy. Yeah. You're going to have to enter it into an online database. Fancy's not going to help. And for portfolios, if you're an artist, show your artwork. Don't have potential employers click a multitude of rabbit holes in order to
that was one of the things I was looking for was number one, online.
Yeah.
I cannot express it enough to you people. I work with like high-end executives, people like Michael Dell, stuff like that on the regs. And buddy, if they can't do it on their phone, they have zero interest. Zero.
You need to have
if they can't access it right there on the phone, done. Like,
and
it's just over.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter what online. You know, there's so many places online where, you know, there's templates for you to just drop your artwork.
Yeah.
So
same thing
free.
With video clips.
Yeah, and video clips, and they're free.
3D surrounds, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they're absolutely free. You can pay a little bit more if you want your own domain name, right? That doesn't have the dot whatever.
Dot WordPress or dot Wix.
If you want to do that, you can. But the most important thing is to have your art in that person's face.
Yes.
And it has to be good. Yeah. So the other bit of advice is learn how to curate your work.
Explain that for us.
So curating your work would be parsing it down to just the best pieces and not the piece that you have the most emotional attachment to.
Thank you. Thank you. Not the piece you like the best.
Yes, because that might not be that great. You might just have a special place in your heart. It's like, well, this is the first thing I did in 3D. I was like, okay, but it needs to come off your...
It needs to go away.
Yeah, it needs to go away.
You need to show nobody but me that.
Yeah, and don't even show me that. Just hide it away.
You've done enough that
never,
one time.
Never to be seen again. No, but yeah, it's hard. It's hard for artists, at least. You know, we have emotional attachments to our work, but sometimes you just got to do that. You just got to go out with the old The other thing too is when you're applying to places, it's especially hard for artists when you're applying to places. Every 6 months, you have to have new stuff.
Yeah.
So that's another bit of it.
Stay active, people.
Yeah. If you're reapplying to a place, you cannot have all your same stuff.
Yeah.
You have to have.
I even make the recommendation for audio engineers, like even if you're going out and doing other stuff regularly, try to record something multi-track regularly, just so that you keep your skills up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can be a great bike racer, but the day that you don't ride a bike for a month, you're going to be surprised what happens to your body and your skill on a bike.
Oh, yeah.
You really do have to keep it up, keep your skills honed, maintain yourself.
You don't use it, you lose it, right?
That's exactly how it is.
And just putting your best foot forward. I mean, these people are looking through so many different resumes. So if you were to look at 100 resumes each a couple of minutes, what would stand out to you? So you want to maybe even, you know, tailor your resume to the company you're looking, you're applying to. You don't want to send them some general resume and then they're going to say, what? Like if they're working on a specific game type for the game industry, then you would want to put those projects that you work on and highlight them and just make it really easy for them to quickly go through and stuff will jump out at them.
Yeah.
And then
I'm going to agree with tailoring the resume. That's a smart thing.
Yeah, it really is. It's great to have a basis, just a framework of a resume that you go in. It's I have a
bunch of different ones, actually.
I'll even go as far as to say to have a really well-crafted initial contact email. That is well crafted, that you can go in, change a body paragraph, change the two and all that kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, the cover letter. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, just,
I mean, just in terms of resumes, during the downturn, I had the most random job and it was super fun. I was an assistant lab tech at a winery in California. It was so fun. It was super fun. And I had to drive up a mountain every day. It was beautiful. And
driving back down might be a problem.
No, I made sure. Safety first. I'll take it home and then invite.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got it through because of networking. A friend of mine, her brother was in a bind. He was the main lab tech, and he was like, "Oh no, the person who's supposed to be my assistant for Harvest just quit. Can Myatt send me her resume? I have an admin resume." I have admin experience. I looked through it. I updated it a little bit. I sent it to him. He's like, "Great. Can you start tomorrow?" She's like, "Sure.
Sure.
Great to be prepared.
Absolutely can." Well,
ladies, thank you all so much for taking the time to sit down with us to share this awesomely informative stuff with our audience. I'm firmly behind what y'all are doing here. The more I read about it, the more interested I was. And after meeting y'all and just feeling the passion in this room with what y'all do, I am so excited for you guys. The fact that y'all are just starting out and getting into this, I can see it growing exponentially the next few years. So thank you very much for taking the time. One more time, Amron, please do tell the audience where they can go to find out more information about the Hofton Institute.
Yeah, they can go to our website, hoft.edu. They can also give us a call. Our number is 512-472-6666.
Absolutely. You can also find out more information specifically about the Game Development Lab at gamedevelopmentlab.com. Thank you once again so much for joining us. While you are online checking out the great work of the Hoft Institute and the Game Development Lab, please do make sure to stop on by TalkingSoundShow.com. That is where you can find all of the episodes as well as the great articles from people like Rupert Neve, Canon, Avid Designs, all that kind of stuff. Great RSS feeds there, just of industry stuff. There's also the interactive map of the U.S., which is in the midst of being updated right now, of companies that hire freelance AV technicians. If y'all like, I can also start adding in game.
That would be great.
Game companies.
Absolutely.
People who hire game
folks. Well, there is an interactive map. It's called gamedevmap.org, I think.
Okay, great.
It's up there.
Awesome, because as far as I know, I'm the only interactive map of AV technicians, where it's like, these are people who hire freelance AV technicians.
And they take donations. gamedevmap.org, I believe, is what it is. And it's all the game companies throughout the entire world. And
nice.
Just click on a dot.
Beautiful.
On the map if you want to go to a
We love those kind of resources. I will make sure to link that as well as the Hoft Institute to the Talking Sound podcast so that we can bring some more attention to you guys. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. Thank you so much for coming and sharing all the great info about the Hoft Institute. And until next time, everybody, keep reaching for 11. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
This is Talking Sound.